Hey everybody and welcome. This is Donovan Bankhead with Springfield Music, and I appreciate you dropping in and listening to the podcast. With the Bow Better Bands podcast, my intention is to talk with our fellow educators across the state and share some of their best tips, tricks, and best practices. Also, maybe even share some of the things that they're struggling with so that we can help each other out, because we're all dealing with so many of the same issues in your programs. And us, as your school music dealer, want to try to be a resource to help you solve some of these challenges and issues. So anyway, we always appreciate you listening. And if you have ideas or tips or would like to be featured on the podcast, reach out to me and let me know. Donovan@springfield-music.com. All right, let's jump in.
Thanks for listening to the Mo Better Bands podcast. If you have something to share, click the links in the show notes of your podcast app and leave us a message. Or email me directly at Donovan@springfieldmusic.com. That's Donovan @springfieldmusic.com. If you'd like to be a guest, would like to recommend a guest or a topic, shoot me a line. Thanks again for listening. Hey folks, I want to hear from you. If you have thoughts on today's episodes, have a suggestion for a future guest, or just have something you want to ask or share, look in the show notes of your podcasting app and click the link to send in a voice message. We'd love to hear from you.
Okay, Haley, so this is a topic that a lot of people are really eager to hear about. What is it like for a new teacher to start their teaching career, especially in instrumental music, in this COVID era? I think there's so many educators right now that like they're struggling. Everyone's kind of struggling, and but there's a lot of people that wonder, like, gosh, you know, this is hard for me, and I have, you know, years and years of experience. How difficult would it be to start out with? And as I was kind of sharing with you, we were just chatting before, like, yes, it's difficult, but on the other hand, everyone knows that you're a new teacher, and everyone knows this is a very challenging time. So you can kind of do no wrong because there's sort of no blame. But so tell me, kind of give me a quick rundown on like what it's been like to be a new teacher in this COVID era.
Honestly, it's a lot of attempts and figuring out that, oh, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do that. Kind of like the little things. I don't know if half of it is being a first year teacher and also with COVID, because along the lines, you're begging kids to put on Germex when they come in. And you're also trying to figure out what is classroom management and just how to go on with that. And to be fair, I feel like at least as a first year teacher, you don't realize what you don't know until you get there.
Like for that's me, such a yeah. Great point. So I took 6 years to get my undergraduate degree. Mm-hmm. And my wife, who's much smarter than I am, took her only five. And I remember we were preparing for her first teaching job in Oklahoma. And, you know, like the days before summer marching camp was to start, it just kind of dawned on us, we actually have no idea what we're supposed to be doing. Like, we know we're supposed to be doing like in a large scale teaching music education, instilling the love of music in kids' lives, teaching instrumental skills and all that kind of stuff. But like, what do we do on Monday? Like, and I remember after thinking about it, realizing, and with the benefit of time, recognizing that my years in college, like, they didn't teach me how to be a band director, but they taught me how to learn how to be a band director. And so I totally can relate to what you just said.
Oh, no, exactly. Like, I remember the first thing, I had an awesome person that preceded me, Miss Susan Meyer. She retired and she set up band camp for me. She set up drumline camp. She goes, here's the dates, do with that what you will. And I remember the first day of drumline camp, I come in and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to tune these drums. I remember you go across. I learned this in college, and the guy gets there, William Green, he gets there, and I realize, do I sit in the room with the tech? Do I go in my office with the tech? do I have to talk with the tech while he's working? Like, it was one of those things that's like, I realized I had no clue about that little bitty detail. Mm-hmm. And I can tune the drums, I think. It sounded okay. But what do I do when I'm there? Like, it's one of those things that you just don't realize until you're forced into that situation.
Right. Well, and you had mentioned too, like in two sentences, you already brought up like all these major issues. Classroom discipline, like that's already hard. And now it's even exponentially harder in a virtual setting. So I want to get to that. But also, like, you know, managing staff, managing other people, like we probably didn't give that any thought before of like, what's our responsibility? what's acceptable? What's expected? Those are all things that you don't know when you start. Maybe give me kind of an outline of like how your year started. Like, were you virtual only? Were you hybrid? Were you seated? Like, tell me like what your school year has been like.
So for us, since we live in New Bloomfield, I think population 660, there's not many of us, really small rural town. We've been in person the entire time minus 2 weeks, which is been scary and terrifying, especially comparing as I compare myself to others. I'm like, why aren't I doing it like this? Why aren't we doing like that? Mm-hmm. We've been in person throughout except for 2 weeks online, and it's been fairly difficult keeping them spaced out as much as we can, masked as much as I can enforce, bell covers outside continuously. And I think the hardest part about it is fighting the kids being kids. Because you don't realize, for some reason, they all want to lay on top of each other and be in each other's business, and they have to try and exchange instruments. So we've been in person most of the time, as scary as that is for this year.
Right. Well, there's benefits to that, though. I mean, that's easier way to, I think, manage it. But then you have the whole other challenges of, like, not only traditional classroom discipline, but now also how do we keep them from communicating diseases to one another?
Yes.
So you mentioned like the challenges of some of the kids and with masking and social distancing. Mm-hmm. How did you deal with that?
It became a joke at some point where I have signs around that says, don't forget to sanitize with some Tide notes, or standitize in the stand room, and just making it a joke because the kids were very determined to try and be as close as possible and ignore the pandemic that's happening. So it's been kind of like a, hey guys, and they go, oh no, and they start moving. And when that doesn't work, you kind of got to be stern. We're outside as much as we could, bell covers as much as we could. My school wouldn't let me enforce masks in all of my classes, which has been a struggle. So I've been trying to get with that and just outside, as far out, moving everything as far in the room as you can so they can get as much space as possible.
Yeah, we've seen that, I think, in more of the rural areas, and many of those rural areas had fewer outbreaks and stuff like that. So you could kind of understand, you know, the reason there. And I'll say this, you're not saying this, I'm saying this, that, you know, it just seems to me a lot of times with administrations, they just want to eliminate like headaches. You know, they don't want upset parents calling in. They don't want to get anyone riled up, and they're taking that approach. So back to discipline then. Give me some of your stories of like some of the early discipline challenges that you had, because every teacher just deals. I mean, every teacher has discipline challenges, regardless of their tenure. But especially newer teachers, I feel like always struggle to get that blend. Any stories stand out to you of lessons learned?
Yes. So there was some drama in the band, as it does, about 2 weeks into school. Someone in the band told a new marcher something and they got upset. They corrected them, apparently, in my opinion, a little harsh. I saw it. And there was a bunch of stuff going on. And I'm like, you know what? Drum major, remind the section leaders to be nice. Like, I was just like, I'm going to let the drum major, since they don't know me, they know the drum major, I'm going to tell the drum major, remind everyone to be nice. And I thought it was a good idea. But apparently the kid that made someone cry knew it was because of her. And at the end of class, everyone leaves. I see her storm off and I'm like, oh no, I'm going to deal with this later. I know I'm going to deal with this later. And she comes up to me and I'm short. She's taller than me. And she goes, what were you talking about? Who were you talking about? Don't lie to me. I'm not going to know if you're going to lie. And I'm like, oh, this has all gone wrong. Maybe I should handle this myself. And luckily, me and the student had some conversations and she sent me a very nasty email, which made it go a little further. But we built a relationship off of me talking to her, stepping in with her coach also to be like, hey, do you see this? Does she usually act like this? It worked out. We're on a good relationship, but at the beginning made me realize don't need the drum major for everything.
Yeah.
The section leaders for everything. And at least with like personality, disciplinary stuff, more one-on-one. At least that's what I know so far. Might change next week. We'll find out later.
No, I think that's good advice. You know, there's an old adage that you praise in public and you counsel or discipline in private. And it's so many times we see this in our business too, where managers or leaders they just think, well, it's just easier. I'll just address the team as a whole. And it was an issue with one person, but I'm just going to address the team as a whole and just tell them and speak in generalities of things not to do. But then everybody knows, like, well, I mean, they're saying that because this person over here did it. And it's not as effective. It's a very passive way to handle it. Yeah. Whereas being more discreet and direct is, you know, the better way to do it. But that's hard. Because I don't know, I didn't go to Missouri State, so I don't know what the education program there is like, but were you given training in college on how to deal with like these one-on-one type behavioral issues?
You like kind of did. They gave you about like tools, like here's how you handle, how you can handle this. Remember to give evil eyes before going up and telling them to stop talking, or the last resort you should be announcing is that it's kind of like step by step of theoretical things. But I think practicum gave you more of that. But then again, you were the college student, the kids barely acknowledged you, so you really didn't get that much discipline. It was more like a introduction, kind of like hinting, this is probably stuff you're going to deal with, be ready. And then you don't know what happens.
right
Yeah.
It's one thing to know the theory. It's another thing to actually like be in the middle and having to do it.
Absolutely.
And so many times you see like your applied teacher, when you're doing your student teaching, handle those issues and they can make it look so easy. Yes. You know, they just make everything look so simple because they have experience. They have the rapport with the students. You know, they have the authority that their position has and their length of time being maybe in that school. And it can make those conversations for them easier to have. And then when it's your turn, you just think like, oh, I've seen that, I can do that. And then when it's your time to do it, you realize, oh, this was a little trickier than than it looked when I was seeing it from the outside.
Absolutely. I agree.
I experienced that quite a bit. I did my student teaching, and my supervising teacher was just very masterful at that. He was really good at and he had such a rapport with students that he just made all of it look easy. And when I would try to replicate his behaviors, like they just wouldn't work as well for me as it did for him. And, you know, I kind of went into it in my student teaching where I was, you know, I wasn't that much older than the students that I was teaching. You know, I was taller than most of them. So, I mean, I at least had that. I was certainly bigger than most of them, you know, so that kind of helped. But, you know, there'd be times where I would try to be too fun and friendly with them. And then I'd kind of lose the control of it, you know, and then it'd start to like get too big. And then I'd have to I would kind of go over the top. And so I remember Darren talking to me like, you know, you just got to like kind of tone all that down so that you don't get them like amped up and wired up. You can't control it anymore. Just kind of bring it closer, and then it's easier to manage. And then you can be a little softer with how you manage stuff. But that was a whole experience. It helped me in my professional career, because I have to deal with the same, I mean, dealing with adults, not children, but it's still human behavior, and it's still tricky and challenging. So your marching season then. So what did marching season look like for you this year?
So we were prepared for all the parades to be canceled. So we did a show band Which if you've ever been to Missouri State, if you've seen Brass and Sass, it's like mini marching band dancing around choreography. So the kids were surprised that I introduced that because I wanted to show for the parents. If we had to be distant and outside, I wanted to show the parents that we were doing something. So we played a few songs with choreography that I think they eventually bought into. Some of them were in love with it. Some of them by the end hated it. I'll say I won with that. So we did a show band. All of our assemblies were canceled, but we did have a Halloween parade in town. So we had floats really far away, band really far away, dressed up in costumes, which is awesome. And we went through neighborhoods. So we went around through neighborhoods playing Thriller. So that was a pretty nice thing for the community. And then we had a winter parade in New Bloomfield as well. So about the same thing, marching around the neighborhoods, and it was really nice. It was, those two parades were a surprise. We were really thinking they weren't going to happen. I still felt nervous the entire time, but the school is insisting, so I did. But I think the kids really enjoyed it. I'm hoping the Halloween parade becomes a tradition because the costumes these kids wore, my only regret is not having them dress as zombies and the drum major be Michael Jackson for Thriller.
So. That would have been awesome. That would have been awesome.
I know.
So
hindsight.
I'm not familiar with your program. So in the years past, were they doing mostly parades as well?
Yeah, we're just a parade band. We usually go to Eldon Turkey Festival. There is an Apple one. I forget where it's at. I think it's Wayneville. And we just do a few parades every now and then. So that's what they're known.
Parade bands, kind of the tradition of the program. Yes. Was it more traditional, like parade, just sort of march down the street and play your songs and stuff like that? Was that the way it was done historically?
Yes.
So with trying to do this different style, more of a, with more showmanship and things like that, how did you get the students to, how did you present that to the students and how did you get them on board?
I am a very extra person. I'm very out there. I have very little shame. So I think, and a little bit, I think I persuade them by more or less screeching the commands in the most fun way possible, because I don't think you can really not move when I'm screaming left, right, and they're swaying. And mostly it was them bonding over each other too, finally being able to see each other, hanging out, liking, they already knew the music. I did that on purpose because that was something they played last year because I didn't know how much time we had. So I'm like, let's do a song they know. And first of all, they liked it. So that bought into a little bit more and more or less. Sometimes I wonder how they bought into it, but I think it was shared enthusiasm that once more kids started buying into it, I think trusting me a little bit more, realizing, I guess if she's going to embarrass herself, we might as well join her. I think it worked out that way.
I was assuming you teach 6 through 12. Is that right?
I teach, yes, 6 through 12.
Okay. And do you start beginning band in sixth grade?
Yes.
Okay. So tell me what your, what that experience was like, starting your beginners this year. Like, that is probably, it's challenging for everybody, and for wind players it's challenging. You know, you're a saxophone player primarily, so woodwinds, so it's challenging always for first year teachers to start.
Recruited, did the beginning band night. Usually they have like a really big assembly right before the beginning band night, but literally 2 days before that all the school shut down, so we ended up with 9 kids when it's usually about 25. So you can tell those kids were determined because they were ain't planning on being in band for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's just me throughout everything. I see them twice a week for an hour, which I wish it was more. I would absolutely love at least 3 days. And honestly, it's been a little difficult. One good thing that I think helped is I started having after school Wednesdays, where I said, all right, you pick a spot in the room, practice something, I'll give you music to practice, and this is where I can help you. And I think that encouraged a lot of the sixth graders to feel okay with messing up and wanting to come in for extra help, and also got them to know each other. throughout of me get to know them. And I think it's going to end up being a tradition. So that's been one way I've been like getting individuals. And as the groups, oh my goodness, I think I'm going to go on a tangent. As a group with COVID, it's like you want to move their fingers and you're like, I can't, pointer, other pointer, and just down the pearl, down the button, nope, this position. And then not being able to like really model too much up close, especially embouchure wise, has been really scary. I mean, just flat out explaining the flute embouchure for me is a little difficult. Trombone embouchure sometimes is a little more difficult for me. So trying to explain it without necessarily showing them as much as I would want to. Those kids have been working hard. So I could tell that they wanted to be there. So I was happy to have that group.
I brought in a ringer here. My wife just walked in the door, and my wife's been a band director for 21 years. Mm-hmm. Really? 21 years?
Shut up.
Gosh, you look so young to have that much experience. Anyway, and so she just walked in, and I was asking, I was telling her, like, hey, you know, what should I ask? And she had a great thing. She's like, all right, knowing what you know now, what things do you wish would have been addressed? Like, if you were to structure a crash course or a seminar for first year teachers, now that you've like done this for almost a school year, what are some things that you would like to see covered in this seminar for first or new teachers?
I think one thing is how to do all the logistics of, honestly, like MSHA. And what is your school rank? What's your level? Like, what's the level? What's just what? Oh man, that's a really good question. You know, I would love a seminar of just random teachers going in a line of saying things that they didn't know was a thing, just flat out. Like, for me, like I said, I think at the beginning, do you sit in the same room with the tech when they're working and you hired them to work specifically with your percussion? Or how do you go through MSHA? How do you read all of it? What do some of the paragraphs mean? Or what do you do when a kid just flat out breaks an instrument? Totally stupid, but not on purpose. Just flat out things like, what's the weirdest thing that's happened? How did you deal? Just in case this might happen to you, just the things that blindside you. It could be called blindside teaching 101.
Yeah, this would be a great, almost like a round table session. Yes. For an event like MBA, because yeah. MBA is one of my favorite conferences. I really love MBA. They do such a great job with it, but it's smaller than MMEA, so you're not in like these overpacked rooms and stuff like that. And you could totally set up a panel of veteran teachers and then have like, you know, the new teachers specialized, you know, come in and like ask questions, you know, people that are like, all right, you just graduated, you haven't even started yet, or you've taught for 1 or 2 years. Let's ask this panel of like all, and there's no dumb questions, like ask all the questions that you want to know. That could be a really cool session. I'll have to reach out to, I know, I'm sure they've got the agenda set for the summer already, but that could be a really neat thing to put together and do. Cause I think you're right. Like there's a lot of that stuff that you just don't know how to deal with that. Mm-hmm. And some of it you don't know until you're there, you know?
Yes,
and
yes.
So it's hard to know what you don't know sometimes.
Yeah, no, there's, I would even say like a seminar or something on dumb tricks that shouldn't work, but work. Just 102, that'll be the next course. Cause I've been realizing I would be saying things that sound stupid, but it works. Like I realize I say the word stinky more than I realized. And if kids are playing something wrong, go, that stinks. And then they fix their tuning. That shouldn't work. Or like make a stink face and they'll go, oh, I played that bad. Like they know instantly. And I don't know why that came about. Or I don't know. Are you aware of the flip octopus thing that's going around?
No. No. Tell me this.
This is the stupidest thing that works. So online, my students showed me there is an octopus. It's a little stuffed animal octopus. One side is happy, but you flip it and you like turn it inside out and then it's mad. So it's a happy octopus and an angry octopus. Those kids will jump through hoops for that octopus to be happy. My seniors, my senior band kids, my drum majors. If I look at that octopus and it's on the happy, I bought it because I thought it would work with my seventh grade. If I look at it, they go, guys, stop talking. Guys, she's going to move it. His name is Bubbles. They named it Bubbles. So if I turn it to Angry Bubbles, you might as well have like told them I'm not mad, I'm disappointed. Like they will right. do anything for that stupid octopus.
Right.
And I bought it for $2.
Oh my gosh.
I thought it would work only on sixth and seventh grade, but it apparently works for the high school band more than I would have thought.
Works for all ages.
Yes. Yes. I don't know why.
It's those silly, that's exactly what I was saying. Silly, it shouldn't work, but yet it does.
Yes.
So you mentioned with your beginning band that you only get to see them twice a week mm-hmm. for an hour each time. Is it that way for all of your middle school bands or just the sixth grade band?
So actually, scarier thing, sixth grade is their own band. And then I have 7 through 12 band, which is also in marching. It's been something I'm not really used to. Well, when I was in my undergrad, I taught at Seventh-day Adventist private school in Springfield. And they were 5 through 10. So I was kind of familiar with that, but they were about 15 kids. But this one's 7 through 12, 43. And so that's the whole difficulty in itself. But I see yeah. those kids every day.
Well, I mean, that's good. At least you get to see them every day. So what are some of the challenges then of working with an ensemble that's 7 through 12?
It's been mostly the seventh graders now looking at music they shouldn't be looking at, high schoolers who could be looking at more advanced music, trying to find that balance and having not the high schoolers bored, but not the middle schoolers absolutely horrified. But luckily we have a bunch of student leaders that have been really helpful with them. Also finding a little easier music again for the seventh graders, but having still an ensemble for the older kids for them to really enjoy. And just kind of working with what parts are a little more advanced. Like I know my trombone section's really out there. So I gotta have found something that's a little harder for them, found something harder for this group, that group. It's just been like a big juggle that I'm still trying to figure out. And I know each year it's gonna get better since I'll know each individual kid's strengths as time goes mm-hmm. on.
But so there could be some benefits to that. And do you use, like, do you have basically like student leadership or your older students are kind of mentoring and helping the younger students?
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. We have section leaders throughout every group. And if they're like closer in age, like I know my flute section, the section leader is a junior and she stuck with two seventh graders and 2 8th graders. So sometimes she gets a little agitated. So I end up kind of encouraging the 8th graders, like, hey, tell the 7th graders what this is, or because they're going to get that leadership position eventually. So it's been about, you got the good, solid leaders, but then also the supportive older mentors, if anything, mm-hmm. That know how scary this is, kind of encouraging them to be nice.
So in the interview I did with Keely Ablin, she does so many wonderful other non like band tasks in her program. And one of the things that she did that I thought was really cool is she does this battle of the bands with yes. small ensembles. And, you know, she wasn't able to do that, during all the COVID. She will use, there's an online resource, and this is all in her episode, which will be live by the time your episode airs. That's a free resource with everything arranged in 4 parts, and it's all free. And so she would use that to basically put together like individual student ensembles, and they'd mm-hmm. work up these 4 parts, and they would have, you know, more kind of one-on-one chance to play, and you could get, you know, smaller groups to kind of play and work on things that are maybe more appropriate mm-hmm. for those levels. Have you tried any of that kind of stuff with your ensembles?
I think she told me about this, like, I want to say a few weeks ago, and that's going to be one of my summer projects. I haven't done anything necessarily like that. There was one point we had a little trio day where I said, pick 2 friends, here's a trio. My PDF is somewhere. And I said, pick a trio and you guys learn it. And then we had volunteers, and I say quotes as, and I go, who wants to volunteer, they volunteer. When there's silence, I go, there's extra credit, and suddenly there's more volunteers. So they would perform their little piece just so they get performance and playing and listening along with people. But I'm looking forward to finding more things like that. So Battle of the Bands is definitely something I'm thinking about.
Yeah, she is a tremendous resource for that. I know she'd be more than happy to share with you some of the things that she does for that. But I would think that would be a really strong thing for your program, because getting all those students to play music that's appropriate for their level. And so you can have stuff that's more challenging for the older students, easier for the younger ones. And I just think kind of can make that easier and more rewarding as well. What has your concert season been like this year?
We had two concerts. So we had a winter concert and a spring concert. We were fortunate to have those in person. We did limited seating. Everyone's super spread out. They had like 3 tickets each, had the whole gymnasium. We were able to do both concerts, including with choir, which is pretty good. Really fortunate. I think the winter concert was a really nice feeling for the entire like parents, faculty, because it's like, okay, things seem a little normal now.
Yeah. It's amazing how much those things are part of our school and community culture, having those types of events. And when they're gone, it's really lacking. So it's nice that you're able to do it.
Yeah, it was good.
That's really great. So what are some of the things as a first year teacher that you like? So we've got the summer coming up. You mentioned one of your summer things you're working on is, you know, you want to work on this idea of doing the smaller ensembles and stuff. What are some other things you're going to try to work on this summer to try to help you to make next year a better year still?
I am definitely going to be working on instruments. I live in an apartment, so I'm hoping as much as I can, I'll be in the school so I don't have my neighbors hate me. So definitely going to be working on instruments and actually be able to feel like I'm more confident in them and not fracking in front of everyone, which I tell them is fine. And I tell them I'm learning and it's okay to make mistakes. So really getting better at that and feeling more confident in that. And also I'm trying to just make sure my handbook that I had, I thought I knew what I wanted. I'm going to redo that. Do some looking and just researching. Don't quote me on the books. They're sitting on my desk. I don't remember the titles, but I've been looking at them. I'm going to try and read a few books on that. And flat out, one of the most exciting things is I am not going to work for like 2-3 weeks, which I don't think I've done since I was 15.
So right.
I'm gonna take 3 weeks off of work. I'm sure I'm going to do something work related, but the mindset is there. I don't have to.
Good for you. You totally should. You need that downtime to like recharge your batteries and all that stuff. That's really important. Take a trip, go somewhere, you know, go to the Gulf Shores, do something, you know, go somewhere and take a break and get away from it all. Yeah. Are you going to NBA this summer?
I hope so. I know I did that grant and I'm kind of waiting back on that. It was the Young Bandmaster grant to see if you get in for free. The results I think are coming up. If not, I think it said June or May. I submitted that. So we'll see. And if not, I'm aiming to get there.
Good deal. Have you ever been?
I have not.
Okay. You've got to go. You've got like by hook or by crook, find a way to be there. I'm assuming you've been to MMEA.
Yes.
Right. And MMEA is fun, but MBA is so special because, first of all, it's completely specialized in band. Like it's just what you do. That's all it is and all the content's there. And it's so much smaller that there's so much more like one-on-one time. And you get, at least in my experience, at MMEA, a lot of people go to MMEA and they see like their college friends and stuff like that. And you just kind of like hang with the people you know, and you don't necessarily, it's harder, I think, to network at MMEA and to meet other people. But at MBA, like it's just so much easier to meet other people, and which is such a tremendous resource again. And the sessions are smaller, so it's much easier to like ask questions, to be engaged and involved. I think for a band director, MBA is a must go to. And as if all that wasn't enough, it's at Margaritaville during the summer. You know, we always go and it's the winter and like nothing's open and like it's difficult or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you go there during the summer, especially now that with all the renovations they've made, it is a heckin' good time to be there. And like, it's, yeah, it's, it's super fun. It's so much fun. Even like our youngest son goes with us every year. He's a tuba player in Belinda's band, in middle school band. And like, he loves going every year. And last year when they had canceled it, he was like super disappointed that NBA wasn't happening. Now he's mainly going and like going, playing in the pool and all that kind of stuff. But like now that he's in band, like we'll have him come listen to some of the concerts and, you know, participate in some of that kind of stuff. But it's a super, super fun time. So it's very affordable. They just do a great job of making it kind of a can't miss. And then Dr. Tim's going to be there this year. And like, you know, seeing Dr. Tim's always amazing. But normally when you go see Dr. Tim, you're seeing him in like some huge hall or something with 3,000 other educators or whatever. And to see him at MBA in a smaller, more intimate environment, I think is going to be really special. So anyway, that's just my push. Be there. Get there. You should definitely get there. Yeah.
I'm hoping. That's my goal.
Good. Yeah. Find a way. Get there for sure.
One of the biggest mistakes I think I made this year, I think I mentioned Misha, how to run Misha, how to do Misha, how to read Misha, how to Misha. I say that mostly because when we were doing district stuff, so with COVID, almost everything is online, including solo ensemble and district auditions. At the beginning, I swore I was in Central District. I had my district kids audition. Two of them got in. They're in. I get an email a week later going, you're in the wrong district. And yeah. So that's,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I'm my kitchen on like, I think it was like a Saturday. I have my coffee. I'm like in tears, like calling my principal. I'm like, okay, I need you to tell me right now what district we're in, because I did it wrong. And he's like, oh, okay, you're on this. And he gets me the athletic director, and I talk to him, and then I'm emailing all these people, and they're like, oh, we'll get your kids into our band Northeast. I'm like, oh, thank God, because I was prepping myself up. I'm like, do I need to fight for my students to get into this band? Or if I need to do this, what do I need to do? I'm like, I'm prepping myself up, and everyone was so helpful.
Oh my gosh.
I'm like, oh, you're a first-year teacher? No big deal. You're probably wrong. You're probably wrong on things. That's okay.
That's so cool that everyone kind of made it right for you. You know, it's an honest mistake. Did. Like, it's a complicated thing. Like, it's, I totally could see how that could happen. It's really cool that they were like, hey, don't sweat it, you know, because that could have been a bad situation for you otherwise, you know.
Oh, I was fully expecting it to be. I was like amping myself up, like to fight for my kids that got into this band and be like, if they already got theirs in, can I fight to have them have a spot even though they're not performing? I'm like, can I do this? Can I do that? And they were instantly okay with it, helping me out, sending me the emails, and they're like, oh no, the kids are in, we'll put them in, no big deal,
right?
They're in it.
That's awesome.
It could have been so bad.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, so is there a funniest moment that stands out over the last year?
Just the kids being kids and having to deal with not just teaching band, but teaching band kids, because we all know band kids, they're in a safe community, so they absolutely love being themselves, and I am here for it. I have some kids that just flat out, one kid every day, he comes up to me and he tells me something bizarre. Just, he lists something out. Like, he'll tell me something like, Ms. Kester, if the sky was green, theoretically, would the ocean then be green because it reflects? But if it's technically, and he just goes on, just once a day, doesn't expect a response, just
says
something. Or I had a kid, last week, she got a boy's hoodie and all the kids were trying to smell her hoodie. I had to tell them, don't go into personal spaces. And apparently me acknowledging the hoodie meant for her running up to me, encouraging me to smell her hoodie. I did not.
Oh my gosh.
I backed away from that. I'm like, honey, that is not something we do here.
No.
And this is not a young kid. This is a junior girl. She's just like, Ms. Kestner, come here. I'm like, no, we're not doing that. or I'll walk into the hall, I'll turn, and one of my kids has a empty bottle bonks on my head as a, that's a greeting apparently, you know, just a light bonk. Keeps on going his merry way. Just these kids, they're they make it a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I could go on tangents on just the things that band kids do that just make you think like, oh yeah, I think I was like you when I was your age.
right. Any heartwarming moments stand out over the last year?
There is one student that she was a new student. She is a senior new student. So that means she's just, the groups have been made, the cliques have been made. She's a senior new kid. And I know I had her with band and choir. And she, at one point, she told me, she's like, Miss Custer, thank you for always smiling and greeting me. Cause not a lot of people do that. And it like made me realize like, oh my gosh, just my greetings make an impact on kids. Mm-hmm. So I try to say hi to kids every day. And now she's one of like, she's not my A+ student. She's always helping me, always talking to me when she can. And that was just a really big thing that stood out to me. Like, I feel like I'm actually making a difference in these kids' lives. Cause you're told teachers, they make an impact. Band teachers always make an impact. Everyone loves band, but you don't really realize until like someone brings it up to you. You're like, oh, you actually, this actually me, I, you, this is helping you in some way. You actually, I'm making an impact on your life. And it just becomes real. They don't really teach you that in college.
Yeah, you really do. I mean, and you're the one of the only teachers that a kid may see for 6 or 7 years. And you know, just the kind of lasting impact you can have on a student's life with that is, it's immeasurable, but it's super important. And you're totally right. It has to be one of the biggest perks of that job, I would think. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest responsibilities, because, you know, it's an easy thing to kind of lose sight of that sometimes, especially in the day to day. So not that you would have the experience to know, because you've never been a first year teacher in a non-COVID situation, but do you feel like that it's been harder, easier, or about the same as any other traditional first year teaching experience?
I think, honestly, I would say it's about the same, but with a lot of tricks. In my opinion, because I mean, as a first year teacher, there's a lot of things you realize you don't know. A lot of things are being thrown at you. There's always going to be things thrown at you. But as a first year teacher, there's so much thrown at you. And I feel like COVID made it difficult. Workload probably still a little about the same, but the blindsidedness, I think, is what got me. Because there's just one, when they acknowledged that we were going virtual for a week, it was told that morning, and it was suddenly, oh, what are we gonna do? And you gotta just run by the seat of your pants. And then the next week, one of my kids is out, and the next day there was a COVID case in the band. Then it's like, oh, what are we doing? Or something gets canceled. What are we? It's just a bunch of just, I feel like, a lot more blindsidedness, and not as much resources this time. There's still resources, but now that we're all experiencing it, there's still people continuously learning. So there's still stuff that you don't know and other people don't know